NZ Aero Sports, Icarus Canopies, now Gyro. That's right, we've rebranded, and Gyro is our next generation. It honours our founder, as that's the name we knew him by, but Gyro also marks the start of a new chapter. And not to be biased, but it's going to be fucking epic. Long story short, we're more us than ever. So if you're new to the sport, or even a Sky God Ninja Turtle, welcome. I think our valiant leader Lucy, Gyro's daughter, says it best.
And we still got that fuck yeah attitude. Rebrand, woo!
Rebrand, woo indeed, Lucy. Anyway, head over to gyro.com for more info and get amongst your legends.
I was 19, broke, unemployed, and sold my girlfriend's canopy for drug money. So I thought I better sew her a new one. What a sentence and what a story. This describes the humble yet outrageous beginnings of NZ Aerosports, the home of Icarus Canopies, in the words of our founder himself. From getting a paratrooper toy from his mom, watching parachutes at the DZ as a six-year-old, jumping off the wharf with a parachute made from bedsheets, doing his first jump at 16, sewing his first canopy on a borrowed machine at 19, and starting to sell parachutes out of a garage in 1986, Paul Gyro Martin had an undying love for the sky. Our company started with one man with the wildest of spirits in a true blue sky dream, a renegade. In the time that Gyro created and ran the Icarus Canopies brand until he passed away in 2017, he pushed everything he had to its limits. We miss him and we always will. Gyro is the next generation of NZ Aerosports. It honors our founder, of course, because it was the name we all knew him by, but Gyro the rebrand also marks the start of a new chapter, our next jump. Gyro is the space between sound and silence, art and science, chaos and calm. Gyro is a state of epic tranquility that transcends understanding. That moment, in the door, in free fall, mid-swoop, where nothing but the present exists. A perfect balance of euphoria and thrill. Gyro captures our passion for flying and our commitment to designing break-the-fucking-rules canopies that deliver pilots pure, wild flight.
Hey gang, so I got a new book out. It's called The Upside of Fear, and it's exactly what you think it's about. It's about the good side of, well, getting scared. In it, we talk not only about the science and biology behind fear, but the psychology as well. And it's not just coming from me, it's coming from some of the best in the sport. Omar Al-Hijalon, Jeff Provenzano, Maxine Tate, and so many more have contributed their sometimes terrifying stories to the book to help you overcome your fear. So head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com. You're going to find the link to the book there, as well as the other books. It's available in ebook, paperback, hardback, and audiobook right now.
Coming straight from the cockpit, it's another episode of Lunatic Fringe with the fucking pilot.
Ready, set, go! Back in the can for another edition of the Lunatic Fringe Podcast and a new friendly face on the other line. Please tell me, who the fuck are you and what do you do?
How's it going, Dean? Well, my name's Lee Crudgerton. I'm a British paratrooper from the UK. And I've been a full-time skydiver for 13 years in the Red Devils freefall team. So yeah, I've been serving in the military for pretty much 20 years now. I guess it's the equivalent to your 82nd Airborne Parachute Regiment. That's who I am.
Definitely heard of the Red Devils once or twice. And I got to say, Lee Crudge, for some reason, is the most English name I think I've ever heard.
I get people, obviously my surname is Crudgerton, right? But obviously I've been known at school, Crudge. In fact, more in the skydiving world, I've sort of nickname from my Instagram, Ryback. So a lot of people know me as Ryback because I used to DJ back in the day when I was younger, and that was my DJ name. But I just let it roll. So like a lot of people know me through that. So
almost all of the Brits that I know are skydivers, and at least three quarters of them have been DJs at one point.
All right. part of the nature, isn't it?
Seems to be a thing. So hey, like I always do, let's jump back into, obviously you've been doing this for a long time, but let's jump into the beginnings of how you got started, not necessarily in skydiving, but in anything extreme.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, I sort of grew up, I obviously grew up in Essex, right, in the UK, so like I was around, we was around the car scene a lot, so like it was always out on the weekend, fast cars, like all my money went on cars. So from, I guess, growing up, I'd liked speed, right, and that was my thing. And then, yeah, I guess I got to 21 years old and then sort of found out all the civilian jobs were quite boring. And it's not what I wanted to do, you know. I went through loads of jobs and working in the factory, this, that, and the other. I was like, man, there's more to life than you know this. So yeah, I went into the careers office in Southend, right? And there's this big walked in, and there's this big sergeant from the parachute regiment, a jock guy actually, a Scottish guy. He's like, you want to join the paras? I was like, I don't know. You know, and he was like, yeah. Job for you. And it was like you can earn an extra £5.50 a day from jumping out of the plane as well. I was like, sign me up. I was like, an extra £5.50 a day, like, over a month a year, that adds up. So I was like, okay, I'm sold. Yeah, and that was me sort of joining the army. That was 2005, actually, I joined. So yeah, some years ago now.
So before then, the military had never really crossed your mind?
No, I had a couple of mates from school that joined, like the Royal Tank Regiment, things like that. And it was always in the back of my head, you know, but I never sort of pursued it or thought, yeah, that's what I want to do. But yeah, my grandpa was in the Navy, you know, back in the day. But other than that, I've not a military family, nothing. So,
sure.
Yeah.
And skydiving wasn't really something that had crossed your mind either?
No, not all really. I'd never been around that scene or seen it, you know, because like YouTube weren't massive then, and you know, it weren't on telly, and you should see skydiving now and then, maybe in an advert.
Yeah.
But never across the mind, like, you know. But in fact, when I'd done 6 months in the parachute regiment depot, so my training, right? At the end of it, you go to Bryce Norton, yeah, and then you do your jumps course. So you jump in there, you go through the whole training process, da da da, and then you jump in C-130s. The whole process, you know, the military jumping process is such a pain in the ass. Like all the blokes that are in the reg, the parachute regiment, hate jumping. You know, not one because of the jump, just two, the in the back of the C-130 for 2 hours, low level flying, with all your kit, you're standing up, everyone's feeling sick, and the smell of aviation fuel and. Do you know what I mean? Do you know all that? The blokes are like, just get me the fuck out of this plane. You know what I mean? And to the ground, you know? And in fact, I didn't really like it, to be honest, jumping. I was like, but if this is what I've got to do for my job, you know, I've got to do it. But, and that's that. So it weren't until years later, I, you know, sort of went to learn to skydive. And that was just for another reason, which I'll tell you in a minute, I guess.
So when you joined the military, not just join the military, but join the military to jump out of airplanes, what did your family think?
Not too sure. I think they were just kind of didn't show me any emotions or, you know, didn't want to make me feel bad, you know,
sure.
From joining. But I guess at the time it was like Afghan had just kicked off, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq. But the parachute regiment at that time was in Iraq. So like it was exciting for me because I was like, man, I know when I pass out and finish training, I know where I'm going straight away, you know.
Sure.
I guess they sort of, you know, didn't show me that. I know, I guess they were quite, if my boy was going to, you know, on any operations, I'd be like, fucking hell, you know.
Sure.
But I don't think it was until I finished training and then it was real. You know, and then it become like, right, you're deploying in 2 weeks. So Iraq, I was like, fucking hell. I was like, awesome, but shitting myself at the same time, you know?
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, it's you said your grandfather was in the Navy?
Yeah, he was in the Navy, yeah.
Yeah, so that was kind of a whole different generation, right? There was a huge, it was a pride swelling around the military, and it was something that a lot of people did. But for later generations, people that aren't doing it are like, what the fuck are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, it was like national service or whatever. I think he'd done like 4 years, and I think he was a chef or something like that. So he's in the kitchen a lot, like. Like, completely different to job role what I'd done,
Oh, yeah.
out at sea, sort of not kinetic, but yeah, it was different for sure.
So this would have been what, around 2006 you got deployed?
Yeah, so basically the end of 2005, going into 2006, I went to Iraq and I was in Alamara actually, and I got put into a multiple. I got into put C company in 2 power, and I got put into a 12-man multiple. There's, as a new guy, so I didn't even. What normally happens after training, like I said, you go to Bryce Norton and do your jumps, but I went straight on ops without my wings, right? So like, I'm rocking up as a new bloke straight out of training to a battalion that I know none of the blokes in, and I was like, this is gonna be th this is it's not gonna be easy, No, and the thing that they call the new blokes is like, you're a crow bag. So I was getting called a crow, like I've got no wings on, and everyone's like, they're very vocal when you're walking around, they're like pointing, like, look at you. But yeah, I guess, it was good to go straight to battalion and on ops, because when I come back, I had some sort of experience straight away.
Sure.
You know what I
That's,
mean?
I mean, still walking in the door, the new guy, and not only the new guy, but the new guy that doesn't have all his qualifications had to be fucking something, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, there's, you go from so through some initiations in the regiment, but we won't talk about those.
Sure. So now, how long did you spend over there before you were back and ended up getting your wings?
Yeah, so I've only done like a couple months over there because they were already sort of over halfway through the tour. So at least I got a couple months in, and I got a medal for it as well, which was a bonus, because you only have to do 6 weeks in country to get a medal, right? So I come back, and then after that, sent off to Bryce Norton, and then done the jumps course and stuff like that, which was actually pretty good, to be fair. It was like 2 weeks in Bryce. You kind of left your own devices, just sort of it is early mornings, sort of finish like 2, 3, depending on the loads. But
Sure.
the whole you getting the C-130, like I say, the whole process is just so long, and the RAF are fucking slow at doing anything. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but they got us up in the air. But I think now they actually don't use the C-130. It's been disbanded, and they're just using the Skyvan now. So
Sure.
yeah, so they're using the Skyvan because it's like quicker, easier, cheaper, right?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Well, and I would imagine too, having gone from straight into deployment and spending time in country in Iraq of all places, which is pretty fucking high stress, no matter what you're doing, to going jumping out of airplanes must have been kind of relaxing by that point. A pain in the ass if you're standing around, but not scary.
Yeah, no, it was fun, right? Obviously doing it with a load of blokes that had never done it before as well, right? So, but it's just cool. I don't know. I guess you just go through the motions, and like you're so sort of like in training, you're told what to do and you do it. You know what I mean? So there's no sort of hesitation there. You just jump and you're like, fucking hell, I'm under canopy, like 600 foot, look down, and you landed already, and you're like, the whole process, hours and hours and hours getting ready, this, that, and the other, and it takes fucking seconds. You're on the floor with all your kit, and now you're tabbing off, and you're like, oh, this is shit. I was a sky god for like 20 seconds, and now, the realities of being an airborne soldier, tabbing, with all your kit, and that is like, oh,
Oh, I bet.
yeah, but that's the past part of the parcel, I guess.
Well, the military guys that I've trained over the years, and I've actually talked to a bunch of instructors on the show that say the same thing. As an AFF, a civilian AFF instructor, military guys coming to learn how to jump are the greatest goddamn thing ever, because you guys just do exactly what you're told, whether you understand or not. This is what I've been told to do, get it done. Man, it's just a joy.
Yeah, it is good. Although I've trained quite a few military guys as well over here, like Pathfinders, some like SBS guys, Special Boat Service guys, and they are very like, your typical bloke, military bloke, is very strong. Yeah,
Yeah.
so you end up fighting them in the sky, but they're like, oh, I've got this, so rigid. It's like throwing an ironing board out sometimes. You know what I mean? And it's just, but no, they're very good, military blokes in general. They're just good at taking on information, right? And then,
Yeah.
Breaking it down, okay, that's what I've got to do. But yeah, it's good fun.
Well, I think guys in general can be kind of difficult to train just because we obviously go into a sport like skydiving thinking that you can out-muscle anything until you realize that the air doesn't give a flying fuck how strong you are.
Yeah, no, you're right there.
That's a tough one. It really is. You know what I mean? As a guy that if you spent any time in the gym or try and take care of yourself at all, you know, having to put away the fact that your strength really doesn't mean much at all is it's a strange thing.
Yeah, it is. In fact, when I done my AFF, and my wife now, she was my girlfriend at the time. I actually failed a couple of levels because I was like, ah, need to get this done. I couldn't do the back loop, and my missus was just like blasé and like bendy and stuff, and she flew through the levels, and I was like, yeah, I weren't happy about that, but that's like my first experience, I guess, for it.
So now, after you'd done the military jumping and you didn't like it and just kind of got through it, what spurred the interest to go out and try the civilian side of things?
I guess it was like, so after Iraq, I done a Heric 8 tour, which was 7 months. And then kind of the back end of that tour, I was like, oh, what am I going to do? Do you want to get out of the army? Because I've kind of done like what I joined to do, you
Right.
know, because that on Heric 8 in 2008, it was a very kinetic tour. Like, and, you know, we was at it every day, like. And then sort of one thing led to another. I got back from that tour. And then there I am, bloody getting on a plane again 2 years later, going to Afghan again. I was like, fucking hell, where's that time gone? And like, and then that tour wasn't actually that bad. 2010, that was, and 11. It wasn't as kinetic, and I had time to think, you know, what am I going to do? And I was looking to get out of the military after that tour. And then there was a guy in my PB patrol base, what we were in at the time, that was a skydiver, and I knew him. And he was showing me a load of videos, and he'd done base jumping. And I was like, what? Like, I was hooked. Like, he was showing me all these videos, and I was like, fucking hell, yeah, that's cool. And then I was working in the CO's TAC at the time. So it's basically the command group of the battalion. So I was working with like the colonel, the regimental sergeant major, like the signaler, and I was in that group. And I got quite friendly with the CO because I'd done a bit of driving for him as well. I drove him around to various places over probably about a year or so. So I got very matey with him. He's now actually a three-star general. It's and do you know what? He messaged up. We'll get into that later. But anyway, I sort of kind of said to him at the end of the tour, I was like, look, probably looking to get out. And he was like, oh, he went, oh, he don't want to get out. He said, have you thought about the Red Devils or anything? Because the Red Devils were part of the parachute regiment at that time.
Right.
So the parachute regiment's free fall team, right? And I was like, I've never skydived before. And he was like, well, go give it a go. I was like, okay. So on leave from Afghan, I went out to Eloy,
Wow.
in Arizona with my girlfriend, and I was like, let's do AFF then. So I've done the AFF course over, well, a couple of weeks there, passed it. I emailed the CO straight away. I was like, this is fucking awesome. And at the time, the CO was friends with the OC that run the team, the Red Devils. Flew him a message, and he was like, can you get Lee on to the selection for the team? And he was like, yeah, no drama. Sent me the joining instructions. Within a week or two that I was back from Eloy, I was on team selection, you know. So that was me, sort of a 2 week team selection. They look at you know, they look at some of the skydiving. I only had 25 jumps, right? So it's not that you had to go into the team like an absolute ninja. They
Right.
just need to see that someone that can take on information and learn quick, you know. So I've done that, and they look at, like, you know, you do presentations, you do a commentary, da 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 da. You get roasted a bit, you know, and can you mingle with like these 15 guys that you're going to be on road with all the time, you know,
Sure.
which is a fair one. And at the end, I sort of got a thumbs up, yes, and the rest is kind of history after that. You know, I stayed in the military and I was on the Red Devils.
Well, I'd imagine too, for something like a Red Devils team, when they've got the time and the ability to train someone from zero all the way up, they'd almost rather have someone that doesn't have all the bad habits you got to break, and you teach them to do it your way from the start.
Yeah, 100%, and that's what they, that's what they did prefer. Guys with fewer skydives, like say that haven't got the bad habits and kind of I know better. Do
Right.
you know what I mean? Like, what are you doing that for? Do it this way. But yeah, so I went into it sort of like, bushy-tailed, open-eyed, and be like, okay, just try. Like, I want to be good. Train me,
Sure.
and then yeah, so I joined the team June 2011. That was. So that was the start of it.
I'm trying to think of back when I had 25 skydives, if I had had the option to join a team as illustrious as the Red Devils. I had my head so far up my ass at 25 jumps. There's no way.
Yeah, I know it's crazy. Like there was a, I guess you do get sort of, I don't know, not babyfied, but you go through the whole progression system. They put me on like a 230 at first, and then I was jumping out for 50 jumps or whatever, and then I got put on a flipping a lightning, mate, 193 lightning. I was like, what the fuck is this? You know what I mean? And the team taken in free fall as well, put me in a deployment bag, and I was like, wow, it was fucking something else, learning on this. I was like, this, there must be more to skydiving than jumping in lightning 193.
Now, did going to your regiment when you first started out in the military, did it kind of give you the thick skin you'd need to get through being the new guy with somebody like the group like the Red Devils?
Yeah, it kind of did. Like, all the guys on the team have obviously served on tours as well, like operational tours. And they've done their time, they've done their stint. It's not that they just like anyone rocks up in a Red Devils not done anything in battalion,
Sure.
because it's a prerequisite. It's like you need to pull your weight and done something.
Yeah,
So
you're the new guy, but you're not new.
yeah, kind of. I was new into the skydiving world. Like, I didn't have a fucking clue about skydiving. All I'd seen of skydiving is my AFF at Eloy,
Right.
I had my head up my ass there, and I didn't really take in what was going on around me. I was just like, well, what do I need to do? Da, 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 da. So I got through it there. But yeah, it was an eye-opener, like, and it was a really good get into skydiving because obviously, the team's reputation's really good anyway. What the team started in 1964, so they'd been going a long time before I was around,
Sure.
So yeah, it was a good start to my skydiving
So
career.
you end up on the team, and obviously the beginning of your time in the team is just learning how to be a skydiver and be a skydiver the way that they want you to. But did they start grooming you for a specific discipline? Were you being aimed in a specific direction from the
Yeah,
beginning?
so kind of when you get on the so your aim is to jump at public displays, right?
Right.
That's the dream, that's the goal, like Red Devil jumping in, jumping into displays. And so obviously you need sea license in the UK, 200 jumps, that's like the minimum requirement to jump on a display. But obviously you need to be able to pull your weight and show that you can do that, right? So every year the team go on a team training camp, normally 3 to 4 weeks. They're actually out in North Carolina now, the Golden Knights currently. So yeah, we do that, and then you get assessed. Yeah, it's the most probably stressful time in my skydiving career. Like, all the Red Devils experience, like watching you landing, doing your approach, and this, that, and the other, and like that. My first few team trainings were in Elsinore, right? So like it was forever. It was good, tricky conditions, like towards a lake, and then you take off, and it's going the opposite way, away from the lake, and you're like, what the fuck's going on? So it was good, like, and you get sort of brief debrief on every jump. So the progression there is, basically to land on the cross or f within 5 meters of the cross, not on your face, preferably, because you're gonna be landing in front of a crowd, right, of people watching you, da da da. So yeah, the progression up to 200 jumps was like stressful, and I think it didn't take me long. It took me one team training. And because I'd done a lot of jumping in my own time, and put a lot of money into it, because that's all I wanted to do, right? Just jump, 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 jump. I got display jumping within a year, which is pretty decent to be fair, as you know, as it goes on a Red Devils. So yeah, that was an eye opener, the first couple of hundred jumps, like. But luckily, I got down onto a triathlon pretty quick. So I got off the lightning and got into a triathlon, which was, I guess, my sort of leeway into, I don't know, on the Red Devils, the fast high performance canopy that they jump is a Sabre 135, right? So when I hopped up and all the guys, the experienced guys, the jump master, the team leader were on a Sabre 2 135, and I was like, wow. I was like, it was like they were hook turning it in, and I was going, that is awesome. I want to be like that. The reality is, if it is down the line, when I've got to learn how to fly a canopy belt, I was like, fucking hell, that's quite dangerous, actually.
I've got a good friend by the name of Simeon Lott that was doing display stuff for you guys back in, I want to say, early 2000s, like 99, 2000, 2001. But he was doing crew stuff, and he's actually he wrote an essay for the book that I just put out, and it's just the most hair-raising, fucked up story because it's crew, of course, right? It's just mental anyway. But he still very much affectionately talks about being able to leave the UK and go to the States for training because it was just the greatest damn thing ever.
Yeah, I admire. Yeah, one big thing with the team, with the Red Devils, is their sort of bread and butter is crew jumping, right? Because that, you know, that's the display, right? When you're coming into land, and it's, you know, the free fall don't really matter because who sees you do that? A bit of smoke, no one sees you, you know. But it's the crew stuff. So I done a season on a team doing crew, right? In a crew team. Although I was like number four, so coming on the bottom of diamonds and stuff like that, with flags and all that sort of stuff. I done my like fair share of like crazy crew stuff, probes, down planes, this, that, and the other. So it's very good. Like, I think learning skydiving and an early stage learning crew is very good for like not being scared of canopies and other canopies, you know what I mean? And being relative to canopies, da da da. So yeah, I think it's a very good skill and like thing to open your eye to.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the story that he told, it was a down plane, and I don't remember exactly what the configuration was, but they were using a strap of some sort to keep him together in the down plane. And as soon as he told me he strapped himself to another guy in a down plane, I went, "Fuck you! No, I don't even want to hear this shit." That's just like once in my career in 12,000 or so jumps, once somebody has touched my canopy in flight, never again. Scared the shit out of me.
It is. You do get like disco leg, what we call it, when you start, when you're sort of compressing and you're pulling someone else down and their ass is in your face and you're like, this is not fucking right. Do you know what I mean? And then someone's passing a probe down to like hook up and you're like, this, yes. Actually, I was on a, we done a quad was the formation that the team sort of done over the years, and it was like a sketchy formation, four stack, and then everyone probes up and it goes into a quad, right? So four canopies. And I was in it once and got wrapped up bad, you know, and there was probes everywhere. There was got someone in my canopy and we were spinning, and I was like, how the fuck have I ended up here? Like, but yeah, no, it's definitely a niche like thing that I
Well,
think.
I mean, for something like that, honestly, though, it must make your standard everyday solo malfunction so relaxing.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like,
When you
if
don't have somebody else's nylon around your face.
got such good pictures and videos that I could show you, and you'd be like, "What the fuck is that?" But yeah, it is. It's good to, you know. Obviously, you do it at high altitudes anyway, but yeah, it gives you time to think, and I guess it's kind of what sort of person you are as well. I guess sort of learning and being in the reg and all this. Tours and helps, and you know, the high pressure situations that you've been in, you kind of relax a bit and you'll be like, okay, you know, think about what we're doing here, pulling a big crew knife out, and like, should I cut this? Should I not? You know.
So you end up in the Red Devils, you obviously become very successful, you spend all this time in the military, and now the guy that talked you into staying is a three-star general.
Yeah, he's Andy Harrison. So yeah, an awesome bloke. He's just to finish time in South Korea, actually. And yeah, he's been in comms with me since yeah, as I went to the team, he always used to, how am I getting on, this and the other. And yeah, I mean, when I had my accident, I don't want to fast forward a bit to it, but when I had my accident and he heard about it, bloody hell, he done a lot, for me, and obviously family, and helped, with that power above pushing down. Yeah, he helped a lot, He's even come around the house and like sat down and, was sitting there in the living room having a brew, shooting the shit. And I'm like, fucking hell, it's the general. And all my mates, and I messaged my mates, and they're like, oh, the general's just been round for a brew and that. And they're like, fucking hell, what is going on? But yeah, no, such a good guy, like.
It's funny, and a billion times on the show now it comes down to the community of skydiving and how spectacular the community is, but it's got to be even tighter when it's that community tied in with the military.
Yeah, it is, I guess. I mean, it is skydiving, like, it's a small community, right? So like we know someone knows someone of someone, and that's, someone mates. So, and the military is, I guess, kind of same. Even with like we train with the Golden Knights a lot, and like that was mega as well, because it's all the same group of people,
Sure.
mindsets, this, that, and the other, and you become very good friends with like, people all across the world and stuff, and all doors are open all the time and everyone's welcome, so yeah, it's a good community,
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember having a great conversation with Craig Gerard when he was busy training the Russian team to compete in World and giving him shit as a fellow American. I'm like, how much shit are you getting for training the Russians for this? And he just kind of giggles and he's like, yeah, just like a good competition, man. But it's at the end of the day, it's just a bunch of skydivers on a different team. So, where did the sport start taking you outside of the Red Devils? Because obviously, you've been very busy and active in skydiving and canopy sports.
So I guess just over the years, I wanted to be the best at my job, right? So being on the team, it was I wanted to be that guy swooping in into a display, right? That's
Right.
that was the goal. Crew was all right, but it was never for me. Like everyone always finds their niche, all the crew dogs always end up doing the crew and loving it. I was like, nah, fuck, crew was good, but I was like, nah, fuck that. I want to go fast,
Yep.
So yeah, that was my path. I ended up in the camera room, so I ended up filming tandems, right? So I was like, okay, this is good. But I got put in a Sabre 2-135, and that was like when I got told I was getting put on that after a couple of years, I was like, this, I've made it. Do you know what I mean? I made them. And then sort of, done the whole wind tunnel thing. I wanted to be good at free flying. God, spent hours and hours and hours free flying, got good at that. I wanted to push the boundaries outside of the team. So like I wanted to get on the free fly records. So I pushed into that realm, been on the last 6 or 7 UK records, head up, head down, done some stuff in out in the States doing like the warm up pre-world record stuff, and yeah, just sort of swiftly moved on. I kind of what gave me the motivation to jump faster canopies is I can always remember the jump master of the team going, there's no way that you can jump a smaller canopy than a Sabre 2-135 into a display. And I was like, nah, that I was like, because predominantly, we jump 100 meters by 50 meters displays, right? That's it. That's all we get. And you know, crowds all round, once you commit to your turning, there's no land off. And I was like, nah, that can't be right. So I proved him wrong. Sort of 2 years later, I was jumping like velos, and then ended up on the Valkyries and stuff. And then at that time, I kind of was I was the jump master by then, and then I was like, okay, so now I set the standard, over the years and the team trainings, I proved that you could do it, and yeah, I spent what 3 4 years jumping my Valkyrie 79 into these displays, and it brought another spectacle of like, wow, because everyone used to say when they see a lightning land, like walk around the crowd, oh, didn't they come in fast? And I was like, what? It's like a 160 lightning. And then, I was doing like big turns into these displays, and they were like, wow, this is next level. And obviously from there I jumped the Peregrines, competed, done the nationals loads of times, and then World Cup. But yeah, just push the sport out of the team that way, because there's like there in being in the team, it is very limited, because really at the end of the day, you've just got to put on a good display, right?
Right.
That's it. No one cares if you can fly head down.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't matter. So obviously you've got to take yourself out of that environment and then push yourself to progress in them other disciplines. If you want a wingsuit, if you want to free fly, if you want to, So yeah, I sort of pushed myself outside the sport, done a lot of jumping, and went away and done my own jumping outside the team. There is guys on the team are like, I'm just going to do team jumping and not spend any money, and that's it. That's fine.
Sure.
If that's what you want to do, like mega. But I really just did want to, be good at what I did.
Yeah.
And another thing, I just wanted to be on the flight line and be like, right, I can do anything. Like, what's going on? XRW on the canopy or the wingsuit, like free flying, whatever. So,
Well, especially once you get to the point where you're basically calling the shots, it's got to be nice to know that you can literally fill any slot that needs to be filled.
yeah, 100%. Like, and it was good for me as well to like, even though I spent a lot of bloody money, like yourself on the sport. It was good for me to take them skills that I learned and then started to feed that through the team. So like, got more guys on the team free flying, before the whole this coach crazy eye fly thing come along, when you could go in and just coach, and we had the tunnel at Bedford, body flight, we had that, and we could just go there, spend a day there, and I was coaching the guys, getting absolute roasted because I was the only coach that could do that. But I was like in the tunnel for hours hanging out, but I didn't mind that because I wanted the other guys to progress and get better,
Sure. Well, not to mention stepping outside of the normal confines of the team stuff, it's got to spark a real love for the sport that might not have been there beforehand.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, it was. Like I say, it does, the day-to-day stuff on the team, like jumping the displays and that is very like, people just see the kind of, I don't know, we jump out the plane and we land and we're like rock stars for 10, 15 minutes, and then we get back in the vehicle and then we drive home. You know what I mean? And it's back to like reality, like, oh, we spent a whole day driving to do one jump in Scotland and now we're driving home and this is shit.
One, it's got to be a bit like a working tandem instructor. I would go out and jump all day long, and I enjoyed the jumps and I enjoyed the work, but that's all I did. I didn't have any real driving passion to do anything else because all I did was just do tandems. And then you go out randomly and make a couple of fun jumps and land and go, oh fuck, I forgot that this is what it's like. Holy shit, you know?
Yes, yeah, 100% true. Yeah, and I've done the whole tandem. I didn't do many. I've just done over about 1,000 tandems in my time, but I didn't want to sell myself to the drogues. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You kind of had to do them on a team because the team on tandem days and we take them for charity and this, that, and the other. So I try to stay away from it as much as I can. I kind of enjoyed doing AFF more and filming tandems. That was my thing.
Sure.
But yeah, you're right. After a day of tandems, you do a fun jump at the end and you're like, sparks you up again. You're like, okay.
Oh, yeah, you remember. Oh, shit, that's what this is about. So now earlier you had mentioned after your accident. Tell me about this.
So what, how much after, or before, where do you want me to start?
Well, you tell me, man. I mean, I was introduced as you've been doing an awesome job recovering and getting yourself back in the saddle in regard to a number of things, but where did it all start? What was the accident and what have you been doing?
So I kind of like I've done a lot of some base I started base jumping in 2013 in Norway, actually. Done some big wall stuff out there and got into base jumping, which was never really a thing that I wanted to really get into. It was one of the other guys on the team that was like my friend Danny Kelly, that now lives out in America, and he has done for years. He's worked at Oceanside actually for a long time. He worked there for a while. And it was him. He was like, oh, do you want to go base jumping in Norway? I was like, well, I guess so. I had about 800, 900 jumps at the time. And I was like, okay, I'm keen. Like, to be fair, my first son had just been born as well. So I don't think the wife was too happy, but I was like, you know what? As bad as it sounds, I was like, I went. Which looking back at it now, I maybe shouldn't have, but hey ho. So yeah, anyway, got into base jumping, done all the base jumps, ended up wingsuit base jumping and all the other bits that go with it over the years. And got into a bit of speed flying with my friend Alexis that used to be on the team, because he'd done it a lot in South Africa before he joined the parachute regiment. He was a skydiver anyway, done a lot of speed flying, access to a lot of mountains there, right? And I used to do it all the time. So sort of kind of showed me the ropes. When I say showed me the ropes, we were launching bloody skydiving canopies in Wales, in Brecon. He was like, yeah, mate, you've been just run as fast as you can. And I'm like, I was like, okay. So yeah, I don't know if you could call that learning or not, but over the years I've done a little bit. Done some flights at Saboba in California. This, that, and the other. So anyway. 2022 it was. The year started fucking awesome, skydiving wise. I went on team training. We done like 100 jumps out there in DeLand. We was in DeLand, and then from DeLand we drove up to North Carolina. We spent just about a week and a half with the Golden Knights, right? Jumping up there. Done loads of tunnel time with them. I done the warm-ups to the world record in Sebastian. Yeah, it was fucking all like the beginning of the year jumping wise was like, yeah, this is gonna be fucking mega. Anyway, got back to the UK, sort of just slipped into the displays, this, that, and the other, da da da. It was actually my first time that we jumped into a display in Birmingham, in the UK, and it was this big stadium, right? And I had it in the back of my head. I was like, I want to put my Peregrine into a stadium. Like, and this was the opportunity I saw. There was an opening, right? In this, and I was like, if I set up deep, far, like quite far back, it'd be like way out the stadium, right? I'd be able to do it. And I was looking at the winds. We went there, recce'd it, looked at the ground, this and the other, and it was like one of my goals, to put Peregrine into a stadium. And I had a 71 at the time, and yeah, as much as I was shitting myself in that plane, like I think we only got about 4,000 foot. I exited the plane through the pilot chute, and I was under this Peregrine with like urban everywhere, and I was like, "Fuck!" I was putting my RDS away, flying to the setup point, and I was like, "Well, is this fucking gonna happen now?" Like, yeah, and I put it into the arena, into the stadium, and fucking hell, that was a fucking good jump for me. To do that, no one's ever done that in the UK before. I don't think there's many Peregrines that have been into any stadiums, so it's definitely one of the first, I reckon. But especially on a public display. So little did I know at that point that was going to be my last display with the Red Devils, right?
Oof.
Fucking it, mate. It's mad how things happen. Yeah. Because that was my big thing, was like, I want to do this, and I made it happen. Little did I know that was it, my last ever display. And yeah, sort of. I went on a couple trips after that. To I was wing I was wingsuiting in Italy, done some because I wasn't current. I went to Brento, Italy. It's massive. A lot of people go there for like the I say it's safe. But I done my first wingsuit jump so years ago, so I just went back sort of. Chilled wingsuit flights. And do you know what? It's fucking weird how things happen, right? My wife actually come with me. I only went for 3 or 4 days. And have you ever been there before?
I've not yet, no.
So at the bottom there's like a cafe, right? So do early morning jump, fly, land, have a cappuccino, right? It's the best thing ever. And was down by the in it was at the cafe, and I was sitting there, and there's a guy in a wheelchair, and this other guy, and he had like some sort of bandage thing on his leg. No, in his hand it was. Sorry, on his hand. We see. I got talking to him, and was like, "I fucking know what happened." This, that, and the other to the guy in the wheelchair, and he was like, "Oh man, I had a bad speed flying accident last year." I was like, "Fucking hell!" But he obviously, was massively into the sport, done a lot of it, base jumping, this, that, and the other, and yeah, he obviously hit the fucking deck hard, paralyzed, broke, paralyzed from the chest down or whatever. I don't know, and he was just out in Brento because. You just like, friends out there,
Yep.
like the vibe, just still wanted to be around it,
Yep.
I was like a fair one. And yeah. And there was this other guy and he had his bandage on his hand and he was fucking jumping. Like I was like, are you jumping? He was like, yeah. He went, I'm having surgery in a couple of weeks and I'm gonna be out for like I'm gonna be out for a long time. He had a motorbike accident a year before that, and his bones weren't healing properly, and he had an infection. They couldn't find the infection, this, that, and the other. And he was like, fuck it, man. He went, like, yo, what's the worst thing that can happen? He was landing on his ass. He couldn't sort of run.
Right.
I was like, fucking, I was like, fair one to the, this guy. So yeah, kind of, it was in my face then. Do you know what I mean? And this was in June, right? I had my accident in July, in the 2nd of July. This was in June. So already there's like alarm bells, like this man paralyzed sitting in front of me. He's had a speed flying incident, but I had already planned to probably go speed flying, in a few weeks down the line. So yeah, I was speed flying trip the month after, or a few weeks after that. I actually borrowed a harness and wing off of someone because I didn't have my own. So yeah, someone lent me that. And I was looking to get into it more, like the whole speed flying thing. I wasn't current. Before the accident, you look back, there's so many like red flags,
Sure.
like on anything that happens, like a snowball effect, right? And anyway, my actually car was broke at the time, like a few days before, and I was like, "Fucking need to get it fixed." I'm not gonna, won't, because we drove to France, because from the UK to Morzine, where I had my accident, it's like, I don't know, 9, 10 hour drive,
Sure.
so it's not too far. So anyway, car went. I literally fixed the car, yeah, like literally the morning before it's meant to leave, right? And one of my friends helped me out, and all these things of what if, like hindsight, if I didn't get the car fixed, all that shit rolls into your mind, right? And if the car weren't fixed, yeah, I wouldn't have fucking drove there, and I wouldn't have been in Morzine,
Right.
but hey ho, I ended up there. I went out with one of my friends to Morzine. We only spent a couple of days, a few days out there, sort of ground launching down a dry ski slopes, right? And yeah, well, we were into it. First day, we done a load of runs. Weather was awesome. It was good. I was like, this, it's like standing on top of a mountain, and it's just like it's heaven, right? It's awesome. It's just like I say, like when people go to Switzerland and base jumping, and that is such a fucking awesome. Like in Lauterbrunnen, it's such a nice place, but it's fucking evil at the same time because it can take you like that.
Yep. Yep.
You're in like such a nice place, but at the same time, dancing with the devil. And anyway, and as you do, get more confident, right? It's flying the lines, flying it tighter, da 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 da. And then obviously, I'd done a lot of canopy piloting, done a lot of swooping previous to this point, but still, them skills are kind of the same, but the canopies fly different, right?
Sure.
Fly different. So yeah, there is a kind of cross there. Like you look at all the other guys at the minute of raging of speed flying. Like Jesse Ware is a fucking awesome one night, and Bo as well. Like them guys, when I see them guys flying, they're fucking ripping. But they're putting a lot of time and effort into it, right? Where like I didn't. Into the
Yeah.
speed flying thing, and my first day I was like, okay, I'm fucking doing all right here. So the second day we've done a couple runs in the morning, it was all good, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna try. Halfway down the run, I'm gonna get a bit of height, and I put my trimmers on, get a bit of height, and I wanted to start doing bigger turns, right? So yeah, above the DZ or the landing area, so it's at the bottom of the mountain, already done the run. So I'm at flying to sort of where I'm gonna turn to land into the landing area, and it was just everything like this happens so slow, right?
Sure.
Got above the landing area, and I was like, you know what? I think I've got height to do a 270 turn. And there was a devil on this side, there was an angel on this side going, just fuck it, just turn. And the other one was like, oh, just do a 90, And the devil always takes over in me anyway. Do you know what I mean? So I was like, went for it. As I started turning, the fucking sight picture instantly changed. The landing area was on the kind of slant, and straight away for me, the sight picture instantly changed, and I was like, "Oh fuck!" The canopy was diving a lot. And at this point, there was nothing else I could do other to than fucking get on brakes hard, try and level the canopy out, but which it did level the canopy out. So I saw the horizon before I hit the ground. However, I still had a lot of vertical speed, right?
Yep.
It was still going down fast. And it was kind of one of their moments just before I was like, this is, over the years, we've all seen it, like experienced skydivers. You're around a drop zone long enough, you're going to see a fatality, you're going to see broken bones, and you're going to see the worst of it. Like, kind of what went through my head was like, fucking hell, this, I know this, I'm about to fucking experience, what it's going to feel like, one, to die or to fucking be very badly injured. And that was all that went through my head, and then that was it. I hit the ground. It just all went black, like, and then from that moment on, I kind of come round again about a couple few minutes after at this point. And I was fucking lucky because where I landed was right next to a paragliding hub, right? So build kit. Like there was people there with like med quals, good to go, and they were like all over me. But at this point I was laying on the ground, kind of like shady around the black edges, as you'd see on the films, when someone's laying there, and I could see my friend had just landed behind me, obviously safely run over. And I had no pain whatsoever. It's kind of, the body is a fucking fascinating thing where it just cuts all the pain out. And little did I fucking know at that point that I was dying.
Oof.
That I was, I was literally dying. I couldn't actually breathe, so I struggled to, whether it was something I swallowed, a stone, I don't know what it was, but I was coughing up. And a load of blood come out my mouth, right? And it was at that point I was like, fuck me, this is not good, And I could vaguely remember just grab, I've got a picture of me actually, because my friend took a picture of me and some video. But I was like gripping the grass, like ripping the grass out. And I was saying, I've actually still got the thing on my GoPro, and I'm like, oh, not my legs. I can't believe I broke my fucking legs. Like, and it's just one thing as a skydiver. I've seen it like loads of time. Femurs broke from swooping this and the other. I was like, fucking hell, I never wanted to be part of the femur gang. I was like, for fuck's sake. Like, it's all come. But, little did I know at that point, like I say, I had fucking one life-changing injuries, and it fucking wasn't good, And then from then on, obviously my wife at the time, she was at the top of the mountain. And my friend, she was sitting at the cafe, right? And my friend obviously called and was like, need to come down. So she come down, and then I changed their fucking world instantly. That was it. Like, helicopter come. A funny story, actually. I say a funny story. So the helicopter come, it landed, and they sort of, I had everything attached to me. They're putting drugs all through me, this and the other, trying to stabilize me, right? My tib and fib were sticking out the bottom of my leg, my injuries were, let's go from feet up. I had a compound tib and fib fracture. I broke my left femur. I had an open book pelvis fracture. My left hip snapped away from my pelvis. I smashed my sacrum. My spine dislocated from my pelvis. So it's called a pelvic dissociation, right? So my pelvis come off. It was sitting inside my pelvic area. I broke eight ribs. I punctured both lungs, and I ripped my aorta.
Oh.
So like, with all them injuries, I should have died.
Yeah, that's not the list of somebody that I'd be talking to on a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So like I'm saying, I'm laying there on the ground, not knowing all that shit is gone, gone on inside me. And do you know what? I say, what saved my life is, but because I was in a speed flying harness, right? And your feet are forward, yeah? And it's like a mutant harness, I guess. You're attacked from like the hips, yeah? If I was in a skydiving container where you're hanging from your shoulders and such, 100% I would have hit my head. It would have gone feet, head, and then that would have been game over. I was wearing my trusty cookie lid, which are one of our proud sponsors that still sponsor me now. So thank
Shout
you
out
very
to
much.
Cookie.
And yeah, like that, I guess that's what saved me having a massive head injury, because it was like feet, ass, back, you know. And I've got a tiny little scar just on my top of my lip there, where I must have hit the ground, my face. But no head injuries as such, which I was so fucking lucky, like
Yeah, I
so
mean,
lucky.
I would think if you had a head injury on top of all of that, your body's just going to say, that's, we're good.
Yeah,
That's enough.
but in fact, like I was saying, the story is the helicopter landed. They done first. I'd had first aid from the guys that sort of were on scene at first. They put me into the helicopter. Right, I didn't have a fucking clue at any of this at the time. They put me into the helicopter, and then it wouldn't start. Yeah, so they had fucking issues with the helicopter, and my missus is like, she told me this like weeks and weeks and weeks after. She's and they had to open up the thing, and they had to fix something on the helicopter because it was broken. And meanwhile, I'm laying there fucking bleeding out internally. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, they got it going and shipped me off to the hospital. In fact, I actually come round twice when I was on a helicopter. I can vaguely remember the sound of it, right? I can maybe and I sort of come around for like probably 30 seconds or something like that, and then passed out again. And then the last time that I can remember was going through the CT scanner. Yeah, so as I'm coming through, it's like something through in a film, right? You know, the CT scanner, you're going through, and I can see me like going into the sort of tube thing, and then I can remember that, and that was it. And then,
Wow.
I woke up in Grenoble Hospital like 4 days later. I was in a, they put me into induced coma there. And I was in that for 4 days. And they pretty much fixed this. They put a stent in my aorta, right? Because I was bleeding. And what saved my life was where I punctured both lungs. Yeah. The blood was draining out of my lungs. When they put me in a CT scanner, they whipped me out very quick because my lungs were like full with blood, and I had a tiny bit left, but where the blood was draining out of them, and I had so much blood around my heart area, yeah, it was enough to keep my body going, right?
Oh.
So they whipped me out a CT scanner, put an emergency stent in through my groin, and
So basically, the hole in your heart was underwater, so to speak, so
yeah,
it didn't run dry.
yes,
For fuck's sake.
yeah. Yeah, so
Jesus, Lee.
that's what fucking kept me alive. And they done the surgery, and they basically got my wife into the room at a time, and was like, obviously I knew all my other injuries, right? And they were like, there was obviously a language barrier there, you know, because they're all French. Some, you know, one of them spoke broken English, but in a nutshell, that was like, he's lucky if he's, you know, gonna wake up. So now she's sitting there for fucking 3 4 days waiting there, you know. All my breathing was done on a machine, so like
Right.
it's an
Yeah.
artificial breathe, right? She knew I was on a machine. I wasn't breathing for myself, and yeah, that was me. But I did, as obviously stubborn as I am, come around, and they all flew, all the surgeons like flew in the room, and they were like, fucking hell, they were shaking up my missus's hand going, wow, this guy's a machine.
Right.
And then it was the fact of like, right, now we have to fix him. You know, because they didn't do anything with my other injuries, because what's the point, right? I might die.
Yeah.
So then I woke up, and then fucking the nightmare started, right? I'm fucking in hospital going, what, you know. At the time I didn't actually know how bad it was, you
Sure.
know.
It's probably a good thing.
Yeah, but yeah, it probably was, you know. All I was on so much fucking drugs. I had a pick in, like I was at everything going on, you know.
Sure.
All the drugs, but yeah, I had the fucking worst 4 weeks of my life in them hospitals. I was in Grenoble for a while, and then they took me down to Annecy. They transferred me down to there, from via a helicopter as well, actually. But yeah, mate, I could just tell you stories for hours about that. But some of the nightmares and shit that I was experiencing there was fucking insane.
I can only imagine, man. I mean, well, and it's very I don't know that it's unique to skydiving, but skydivers in general have way more fucking medical knowledge than we need, because either We or somebody we know has been through some fucking shit, man. I shouldn't know what a pick line is, but as soon as you said pick, I'm like, oh yeah, I know what he's talking. I shouldn't fucking know that. I'm not a goddamn doctor.
Yeah, I know, mate. Yeah, and it's mad that, you know, like I say, if you're around this sport long enough, you will know someone, unfortunately, that has died or
Yeah.
seriously injured.
How
And
many
that's fucking
surgeries did you end up having?
hell, mate. I had so many, mate. I've had multiple. So in France, they initially, so they went to fix my leg, at first, tip fib. They put a rod in. Got infected straight away. Yeah, they had to take it out. So they had to take that out. And then they put some metal work in the bottom. It's basically like a frame. Yeah. I had that on my leg. And put a rod in my femur to fix that. Standard, you know, rod in the L femur. And then my back, it was my back surgery that was complicated, right? Because it was, I kind of guess that they were trying to shy away from doing it, but yeah, they had to stabilize me, right? So my back surgery, that took a week or so, a couple of weeks. They left me, you know, with a broken back, basically a pelvis, until they'd done the surgery. When they'd done the surgery, they fucking done it wrong. I say done it wrong. They just, what they wanted to do is stabilize me so I could get flown back to the UK. Yeah. They basically just wanted me out there. So what all they done is, as you can imagine, the pelvis is the spine's now inside my pelvis. They just screwed my spine to my pelvis inside. So they didn't, like, that's my pelvis. They didn't put it back on top. They just screwed it like that in there. So they've done that. Obviously got all the X-rays and stuff. And my wife was in. I'll go back to the general now. His family have got connections in the NHS. And they know the top surgeons and this like that. So we got in contact, or my wife did at the time, with all the best surgeons, who to go to, who does the best pelvic surgery, back surgery, and that's where I need to be. So yeah. So obviously I went back to the Royal London in the UK, and they'd already seen all of my surgeries and X-rays before I got there. So they knew what was, you know, how fucking bad it was. And all the shit that they had to undo and then fix again. So don't get me wrong, you know, they saved my life with the stent, you know,
Sure.
which I'm grateful for. But you know, the back surgery was you know, it's a big one for me because that put me back, excuse the pun, for a long time.
Well, not to mention what, knock 2 inches off your height?
Yeah,
not to be
exactly.
petty, but fucking hell.
Yeah. And the surgeons are like, honest, they, you know, we had talks, and the surgeon was like, mate, if you leave your back like that, you are fucked. You are never walking again, and you will always be in a wheelchair. There's no ifs, buts about it, this, that, and the other. And then I, you know, it was kind of a thing, another story, getting me back to the fucking UK as well, where I was obviously, yeah, in the military, but I was away doing my own thing, right? I was free
Sure.
flying. It happened to do in the military, so. As good as the military have been, you know, they were like, well, you weren't on duty, so
Yeah.
we're not repatriating you back to the UK. And like, you know, as like I say, Andy Harrison, the general, was pushing hard from the top, and even he couldn't get that done. So there's a charity called Support Our Pararescue, which are the charity of the parachute regiment, yeah, and airborne forces that they help. So, you know, veterans. The limbless, anyone that's been in them services and, you know, got any dramas. But, you know, we knew, I've sort of know the charity because we've worked with them on a team, you know, through the years, this and the other. But they put a you know, a support charity fundraising, you know, to get me back to the UK, basically, because it's a fucking lot of money to get medevac back from, you know, France to the UK.
Yeah.
They raised a shit ton of money, and it was fucking awesome, like what they done. You know, and they got me back essentially to the UK. You know, I actually come back in a King Air. Funny enough. Yeah, they squeezed me into a King Air, and I was like, fucking hell. But yeah, I got back on one of those, rolled through the doors 4 weeks later at the Royal London, and then started again, you know. They took me apart, and then the whole back surgery. They put me into traction for 2 weeks, yeah. So obviously I've now been in what, 2, 3 weeks with that metalwork in my back in the wrong position, and now the bone's starting to heal. Yeah. And now they're taking all the metalwork out and they put me into traction. So I had two massive, it's like a halo they put on me, yeah. So drilled into my head, yeah, and they hung 20 kilograms off of my head, yeah, and 15 kilograms off of each leg. So now my spine is separate to my pelvis and it's pulling me out. It's like a medieval fucking operation, you know. And they're pulling me apart, and I was like that for 2 weeks, mate.
Jesus Christ.
And honestly, it was like laying in a vice for 2 weeks. It was fucking horrible, mate. And you know what? When they there was obviously I had to be changed at, you know, I had to be changed most days. You know, I'm not gonna lie, I'm fucking shitting myself and this, that, and the other, left, right, and center. And when they take them weights off, you feel your whole body and spine just do this, go in. And
Oh.
that was the fucking weirdest feeling ever, mate. Honestly, it's horrible.
Wow.
Anyway, so that was me for 2 weeks there before they operated again. And then yeah, 2 weeks on, opened me up again and put the metalwork in, you know, so stabilized my pelvis and put my pelvis spine back on top of my pelvis where it should be. And screwed it to its place where it should be now, you know. So yeah, that was that. But I was in the hospital there. I had complications on my leg that didn't heal. I had basically a cage on my leg for a year, sorry, because of the healing process, because it didn't heal first, and I had to have that reoperated on. I had to have it broke. I had to lengthen the bone 40 mil with the whole turning every day.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's been a long process, do you know what I mean?
I
So
mean,
yeah, that was that.
fucking hell, dude. I mean, normally you say injury to somebody and you expect a broken bone or a couple of broken bones or even for a skydiver, a broken back or something. But with that list, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's a big one, and just that road to recovery, and I'm still on now. You know, I was in Royal London for months, in confined to a bed, and I was in a wheelchair. And then the process starts, you know. I went down to 61 kilograms.
Wow.
Yeah, which was my normal weight would be like 88, 90 kilograms.
Sure.
I went to 61. And honestly, when I show people the pictures and videos of me then, they're like, fucking hell.
Yeah,
Like,
man.
I literally look like I come out of some sort of concentration camp. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it is. And then when I look back at it, I'm like, even myself, I'm like, fucking hell. Even sitting up for me was the hardest thing I've fucking ever done. You know what I mean?
You know, I mean, it's kind of crazy because obviously I think we've talked for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. We've been trying to line this up, and I knew that you'd been injured, but not anything along the lines of what the story was. And we were supposed to do this, I think, what was it, a week ago or so? But you messaged and got, "Hey, I'm skiing in Germany, so if we can push this," so I'm automatically thinking, "Okay, he fucked himself up, but he's going skiing." So it's, I mean. It couldn't have been that bad. Dude, you just went fucking skiing after that. Holy shit.
In fact, I was due in for I, well, I went into the hospital a couple few days ago, and I was all the metalwork that was in my spine and pelvis and that they're taken out. Yeah.
Really?
So yeah, because it was it's a weird one, because I didn't break my back as such. It was a pelvic dissociation, what they called. They just fixed my spine back onto my pelvis. Now it's fused back on. They can take it all out. You know,
Oof.
at the minute, my lower three vertebrae are fused due to the
Right.
metal. So when they take that out, it's going to free me up a little bit more. Honestly, mate, I sat in the hospital all day. I saw the anaesthetist, I saw the surgeon. Come 5 o'clock, they were like, yeah, sorry, we've run over. We can't take it out. I was like, you're fucking joking. Yeah, I've been waiting so long for that. So now I've got to wait for another day to get that out.
Oh, man.
Ah, so the anticipation still rolls, but
Well, and for anybody that's never had any surgeries or anything like that, you have no idea what kind of anxiety is
yeah.
brought about by waiting for a fucking surgery.
Oh yeah, it's hideous. I mean, the guy going back now from when, you know, I had the back surgery, my surgeon, Peter Bates, his name is actually. Fucking awesome guy. So, you know, He one of the best pelvic surgeons. They call him Ballsy Bates actually because he does not fuck around in like telling you. I was laying there in the bed and he come banging. I can remember he knocked on the door, boosh, opened the door. I was like, fucking who is this guy? And he was like, look, with your injuries and this surgery you're gonna have, you're probably never gonna walk again, this, that, and the other. And I was and like he walked out and I was like, that was a fucking humbling moment. I was like, wow. Do you know what I mean? It's like this is fucking horrible, you know, to hear that. And he was like, as for you jumping and stuff like that, he was like, that is never happening again. And I was like, fuck. Like hit home. That, do you know what I mean? Hit home there. And I was like, fucking hell, is this, I didn't want to believe it, you know? But I kind of just had to roll with it, I guess. I was like, all right, just fucking fix me and then we'll see. But yeah, as the time went on, because I got worse before I got better, right? All my muscles went, all the, I just, everything just, went. I was just, I had no strength whatsoever. And then I was like questioning myself. I was like, fucking hell, maybe this is it. Do you know what I mean? I was in a wheelchair for a long time, couldn't do anything, stand, even to get into the house was, and then it hit home for me. I was like, bloody hell, you never really think about like being disabled or paralyzed or have a spinal cord injury until you fucking got one and you're like, wow. You know what I mean? Because my injury is classed as a spinal cord injury, right? So yeah, and I've still got issues now, which I damaged the S1, 2, and 3 nerves. My left foot doesn't work anymore. My left calf doesn't work anymore. It's gone. However, my knee still operates well. I still got the strength in that. My quads and my hamstrings do. So, with a brace on, with a foot up brace, I can manage that. And I can actually, will I run again? Probably not. But I can still walk and I can get around. And my legs are actually pretty strong. And, I can do, I'm actually leg pressing like over 100 kilos now and this, that, and the other. So yeah, there's light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing. But, the whole process has been flipping. The body is so resilient to damage and how it can come back. And I've looked at, there's so many things on YouTube now, people having like traumatic injuries and then coming back from them, right? And I've been in dark places fucking a lot of times, and you just have to just find that inspiration again from, them sort of things, them other people that have had these injuries and they've come back from them, even, if I was look before I went to skiing, actually, there's this guy that got paralyzed snowboarding. I forgot his name now, Trevor something, but he's now fucking back. Yeah, he's still paralyzed, but he's sit skiing and he's still like he's done a double flip recently in his sit ski and he's out on the mountains. And I'm like, fucking hell, this geezer's like ripping. Do you know what I mean? Paralyzed, but is that's not stopped him. You know what I mean? And I'm like, fucking hell, well, anyone can do it. It's a mindset.
Absolutely. Well, and it's crazy how humbling an injury can be, but it's also crazy how oddly empowering it can be as well. I mean, I not anywhere near in the league of what you've gone through, but I had a couple of spinal surgeries on my neck from too many years of heavy camera equipment and trash discs and stuff. And the surgeries didn't go the way that they were supposed to. When I came out of the first surgery, I couldn't lift my fucking left arm. And you would know a lot better than me. Not being able to do something you take for granted, the instant it sinks in, the instant my brain realized I can't pick my arm up was a moment I'd prefer never to have to experience again. It's fucking terrifying. And that was just my arm.
Oh, 100%, man. I couldn't move my feet, and my feet are still very altered now with the nerve damage and stuff. I can't really move them that well. And like the feeling, my left one's quite very numb, but I'm just getting used to the new normal, right?
I
I
mean, there had to have been multiple moments when you're standing on skis on top of the mountain that you're like, look at this shit. There had to
yeah
be.
yeah and there was, mate, there was they've yeah to be back up there. In fact, I had to I messaged two of my surgeons. And I emailed them and I was like, this is me, and I'm out skiing, and they were like, fucking hell, like they couldn't believe it, like they really could, and they were like, wow, I think they were quite chuffed, to see me where I was and like seeing me skiing, they were like, wow,
It's
like.
got to be something. I mean, because obviously doctors, there's got to be a very fine line that they walk, right? Because I think that they'd much rather tell someone the worst possible outcome and hope that they do better than give them hope and have those dreams dashed, right?
Oh yeah, 100%, mate. Like, and then that's their job, I guess. And they see it day in, day out. And probably 9 times out of 10, people don't come back
Sure.
from, as good as what they think. So yeah, I guess they can't give false hope, and that's just it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the way of the world, and I mean, again, skydivers can definitely be a different breed. We don't generally stay lying down of our own accord, when and we're going to push a little bit harder than maybe somebody else would.
Yeah, so that I went from the Royal London to a spinal unit, and that was a fucking big eye opener as well. I was in a wheelchair at this point, couldn't walk on nothing, but in this spinal unit was all spinal cord injuries, right? And
Sure.
in fact, when I got there, I was like, "Fuck me!" I was like, "I'm actually the least injured here because there's people here that are tetraplegics, paralyzed from the chest down, all this other shit," and I'm like, fucking, like, there's people there driving their mobility chairs with their necks
Yeah.
because all they can move, and I'm like, fucking hell, maybe I'm lucky. You know what I mean? Like, it could have gone way worse.
Sure. That's a
Yeah.
hard-fought place to get to that point where you're sitting there going, actually, this could be dramatically
Yeah.
worse.
There
But
was a
to get
guy that.
there, that takes some serious, that's a lot of hard work to get to that point.
Yeah, it is, mate. And like, it's not that I've not, I've done a normal job through the years, and I've not pushed it, because 100%, I've been charging for 13 years hard. You know what I mean? And
Sure.
yes, there are many times that I've gone like, fucking hell, that was
Yeah.
close. Well, that's, I was lucky there. This should have happened. There was a guy at the spinal unit that fucking walked down the stairs, fell over, and snapped his neck. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's not been charging,
Yeah.
So like, it's kind of it's one of those in skydiving, base jumping, it's a numbers game.
Sure.
The number,
Yeah.
it doesn't matter, 50,000 or 50, it's there. Whether it's a broken leg, like I said, everyone has their parachute crash, man. And like, whether it's, like I say, a broken leg or something worse, someone always experienced some sort of trauma like that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that I broke my leg once that was a minor break, and I broke my tailbone. But that tailbone, a mile or two an hour faster down, and it wouldn't have been a tailbone, and it's those ones that you look back on, especially in the sport for, 28 years. I've known so many people that have fucked themselves up. You're like, I was that fucking close. How many times? But that guy that you just talked about fell down the stairs. So I mean, that's kind of the biggest sales pitch in the world to be smart, but go.
Yeah, 100%, mate. I mean, I can remember in there was a we was in Pretoria at the World Cup 2019, actually, and it was a zone accuracy run, and we was in the plane. It was a bit cloudy, and you know what it's like if you go, you go, and that's your scoring round. If you jump out the plane, that's you're committed. That's you. And then we circle around a couple times, and it was about 10 or 12 knots downwind, and
Ooh.
it's at Pretoria, right? So the drop zones are 500 foot AGL already,
Yep.
and I was on a Valkyrie 79 doing zonac, and I was like, right, we're going. I jumped out, sorted my shit out, done my turn, and as I rolled out, I was like, wow, I am going fast, and this is a zonac round. And I come screaming through the course, and I was like, I ain't gonna fucking slow down. The only way that I could stop is just let my toggles up, right? As soon as I got into the thing, let my toggles up and just stoof in. I've got a picture of me, right? And I'm bent in half, right? My chin is on my chest, and my whole top body is just folded round. And I look back at that picture, and I actually show a lot of people my I must my physiotherapist, this, that, and the other. I'm like, fucking hell, I'm lucky I didn't bend myself earlier because look at this picture. And they're like, wow, how you didn't snap your neck in
Yeah.
that? I do not know. It was so hard. I got up from it, and I think it was Alex Hart who had just done the run before, but he got lucky and the wind weren't that strong then. And he was like, he looked at me, he was like, fucking, you're all right, mate. I was like, yeah, I'm in my place. Like, I couldn't believe it. I got away with it. It was just another one that I got away with, you know? And that could have been, that definitely could have been a broken neck there, but.
Yeah. I mean, you spend any time in the sport and you're going to look back at ones that you got away with, and that's the only way to put it.
Yeah,
It really
100%,
is.
mate.
So hey, as we wrap things up, shine a light on the charity that helped you get home. I know you said it was attached to the military, but tell people how they can find out a little bit more about that, if there's something that they can do, and how they can maybe reach out to you directly. They're recovering from an injury, they know somebody that's recovering from an injury, and they just want some tips and maybe a little encouraging word here and there.
Yeah, so I mean, the charity that helped me was Support Our Paras, which, like I say, they're an airborne charity. So anyone that's within the airborne and sort of parachute regiment, you know, helps families, veterans also. You can find them at supportourparas.org. But like I said, so yeah, they're still ongoing helping now with stuff, you know, if I need anything.
Awesome.
They've bought me like stimulation devices, you know, for the muscles and this, that, and the other. But yeah, they've not just helped me out, but obviously family as well,
Sure.
like my wife. Just help the kids and just with stuff and just, you know, just general, you know, anything sort of need help. And also with friends as well that have, you know, had injuries from Afghan. This, that, and the other, you know, helping them with prosthetics or whatever it is. So yeah, flipping awesome charity. Actually, me and my son are doing a bike ride in September.
Awesome.
We're riding from Colchester, which is where my unit is based, to Arnhem for the 80th anniversary.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So we're riding to Arnhem. It's 100 miles or so. My son will be 11 then, but yeah, so we're raising some money for Support Our Paras there. Yeah, so that's on like a Just Giving, well, not a Just Giving page, the Support Our Paras website. You can go through the there, find the link, and donate. Would be very generous of you, even if it's a
Awesome.
penny or a pound or a dollar. But yeah, that should be good fun.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
And how about you? How can somebody reach out to you if they want a little advice?
I'm on Instagram. I am under Lee Ryback Crudge, or under on Facebook, Lee Crudgington, I think my name is, or that might be the same as my Instagram. Or email is Lee underscore Crudgington at hotmail.com.
Perfect.
So yeah, mate, anyone wants any advice on how to get back from a almost, you know, not survivable accident, give us a holler.
Man, I'll tell you what, Lee, I cannot thank you for taking the time, not just to sit down and share the story with me, but with everybody. And fuck me, man. I mean, you hear you're going to be talking to somebody that's on their way back from an injury. You don't expect that kind of injury. So I really, really thank you so much for sharing that. That can't be easy.
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, my goal this year, and it's I will make it happen, is I'm going to jump again.
I
And
wish you all the best of luck. I
I mean,
seriously hope.
yeah, I went back in the winter actually last year in November or September time it was, just to see where I was at, you know, because I wanted to be like, right, where am I at? Where am I? And actually, it wasn't too shabby.
See, there you go.
And I was like, okay, this can happen.
Well, I just had actually the episode that aired right before this one will air will be Jimmy McCarthy. And we had talked briefly because he was here in Helsinki, because it turns out this is like some of the cheapest tunnel time in the world. So when you get back into it, I expect you to show up in Helsinki, and the first round is definitely on me, man.
Yeah, man, 100%. In fact, when I went to the tunnel in Basingstoke at iFly back here in the UK, Jimmy was there.
Nice.
So I saw him there. He was like, fucking, it's your first time back. I was like, yeah, man.
Oh,
It's good fun.
that's fucking epic. Well, Lee, again, thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries, man. Like, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Take care, brother.
Yeah, and you did.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of the Lunatic Fringe podcast brought to you, as always, by, well, wait, not as always, actually. Brought to you now by Gyro. Formerly known as NZ Aerosports, you'll head to gyro.com for their next level line of canopies. By Pussfoot, the Extreme Sports Collective. Head over to pussfoot.com to check it out. By Summit Parachute Systems, check out summitparachutesystems.com to talk to Jarrett Martin and the gang about kick-ass pilot rigs, rigging courses, and more. By Flyaway Indoor Skydiving, go to flyawaytn.com and check out all the cutting-edge stuff to come. By Pure Spectrum CBD, head to purespectrumcbd.com to check out their wide range of CBD products. And as for us, head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com to listen to any of the hundreds of episodes currently available, hit the link for our YouTube channel, pick up your copy of the Lunatic Fringe book or The Accidental Stripper, and get a sneak peek at upcoming guests. Once again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Damn.